7200. Thanks again for listening to GCNLive.com.
We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit and carting to a private bank, having it led back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Hi, Ted Anderson. I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
Now you can bring Berkey Purification Power anywhere with the Sport Berkey Filtration Bottle. Ideal for sporting games, camping or boating, or Sport Berkey is small enough to store in your glove box, so it's ideal backup for unexpected emergencies like blackouts, floods, or earthquakes. It's simply the best personal water filtration system available. So effective you can drink raw, untreated water from lakes, rivers, and streams. Unlike other sport bottles,
you're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, of course, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Colonel Ron Ray. And Colonel Ray is a retired Marine Corps colonel. He's trained as a lawyer. He actually was a lieutenant and fought in Vietnam with the infantry. He eventually became certainly a assistant defense, Secretary of Defense there in the Reagan administration, served on President George Herbert Walker Bush's panel to determine whether or not we should have homosexuality and women in combat in the military. But he certainly is one of the leaders of the effort to educate the American people about the true spirits of battle we're involved in today, and certainly trying to defend the moral values of our military, and certainly his organization is certainly reaching people all across America with an understanding that the military is different than the general society. The military has specific rules. They have to have an efficient fighting organization, and you destroy the moral and religious foundation of our military. You destroy the military, and believe me, there are people in America today who want to destroy our military because they want to destroy America. Colonel, thank you so very much for being with us.
Dr. Stan, it's always great to be with you.
Well, we did a program this morning, and you can repeat what you talked about this morning because this is an entirely different audience. So you pick up the story.
Well, I appreciate that very much. We were talking as you wanted me to talk about the how America was brought to a place where they could support or appear to support the invasion of Iraq, which did not threaten the United States in any way, was not affiliated with anything that happened on 9/11, and was not working. In fact, Saddam Hussein was working against Al-Qaeda, and I said, you know, there's a pattern here. If you look at the truth about American history, if you look at the censorship of American history, and you look at the nature and origin of the mass communications media, you begin to understand that we've been lied to many, many times. You and I were talking that if you go back to the thinking of the USS Maine in, I think, in February of 1898, that the Spanish government had essentially pleaded with the United States not to send a warship into Havana Harbor. We had empire designs on expanding in the Caribbean and in the Philippines, and they brought the Maine in, and at the time we were told that it was destroyed by, they didn't use the word terrorists, but that they blamed it on Spain right away, and of course historians now have determined that it was due to an explosion inside the ship. not mines on the outside of the ship. So, but it did get us into the Spanish-American War, and we ended up with the control of Cuba, and we ended up in the Philippines. Philippines is very much like the Iraq War, in that we went in originally, and the Philippines, Filipinos supported us, they welcomed us, they thought we were going to help them throw the Spanish out. We defeated the Spanish army in very quick order, the way we did in 2003 against the Iraqi army, and then when the Filipinos understood we were going to stay, and then the insurgency grew up, and we took serious casualties after that.
And of course, the people have forgotten that we killed between 500,000 and 2 million Filipinos because we were starting our move towards a world empire. This is what it was all about, the manifest destiny. America was to rule the world. Now, they can't let the American people know about that today. I mean, oh my goodness, we're just bringing democracy and freedom to people throughout the world. Well, if that's true, why do we have troops stationed in 130 nations? Why do we have large components of troops in Germany and Japan 50, 55 years after the war ended? Does anybody ever ask the questions? And no, all we have to do is just believe what Rush Limbaugh tells us. Everything's going to be fine. Well, Colonel, you picked the story up there.
Well, I was just going to go through quickly. The attack on Pearl Harbor was supposed to be a surprise, but even mainstream historians... fellow that wrote...
Robert Stinnett,
yeah, who was the World War II biographer of George Herbert Walker Bush, a mainstream historian, wrote Day of Deceit, revealing the 8 specific acts of war we were engaged in covertly against Japan, which to bring them to attack Pearl Harbor as a quote-unquote surprise. We now know it wasn't a surprise, to enable us to get into World War II. In World War One, the Lusitania was said to be an unarmed passenger ship. We were all told that, and it was attacked by U-boats, German submarines, but in point of fact, they were carrying illegal cargo in violation of the neutrality policy, and there were a lot of Americans on that, and that helped bring America into World War One. And now we know that what it really was carrying. In other words, it was a similar incident promoted by the media and the mass media.
And I think it's so important for people to understand that the Germans actually had taken out ads in American newspapers telling Americans not to go on the Lusitania because it was going to be sunk. And the State Department was contacting the Americans and telling them, you've got nothing to worry about, you just go ahead and do it. And it was for that reason William Jennings Bryan, who was the Secretary of State, was furious when he found out that his State Department was telling people to get onto the Lusitania when it was known to be a ship of war carrying cargo, carrying contraband. And actually, that's one reason why William Jennings Bryan resigned as Secretary of State, because he suddenly realized he was simply a figurehead. There was a force behind the scenes that wanted to take America into World War One, just as there was the force that wanted to take us into World War Two, and then, of course, into Korea, and into Vietnam, and into the first Gulf War, and now the second Gulf War, which is dragging on and on and on. Go right ahead, Colonel.
Well, the Tonkin Gulf incident is a great, me and my generation, we're part of the, we're not boomers. I was born in 42, so I'm part of the veterans generation, and I went on active duty as a Marine second lieutenant in August of 1964 when the so-called Gulf of Tonkin incident was reported as if North Vietnamese torpedo boats had attacked the USS Turner Joy and the USS Maddox, which were in the Gulf of Tonkin. In fact, it came out later, much, much later, that in fact we had some sapper units ashore, and they were supporting the units that went ashore that were doing acts of war, that were blowing up bridges and doing things like that in North Vietnam.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with Colonel. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Colonel Ron Ray. He was just talking about the Gulf of Tonkin incident, and he told an amazing story this morning about actually meeting a gentleman who was on one of those ships that was supposedly attacked by the North Vietnamese torpedo boats. Why don't you tell that story? I think it's an important part of history that every American should hear.
I will. Let me just back up just a little bit, because I got out of the Marine Corps after the Tet Offensive, where I was with watched the most trusted man in America, tell Walter Cronkite, who died recently, that he told the American people that we'd suffered a strategic defeat, that there was no way to win the war, there was no light at the end of the tunnel, and victory was impossible. We needed to begin to negotiate, and that was believed by the United States after we'd won a decisive victory at Way City. I was at Way City in the Tet Offensive and saw the victory we won under difficult circumstances. I came home to go to law school having this vague sense of something was wrong with the conduct of the war. A country the size of the state of Mississippi in America, the most powerful country on earth at the time, was floundering against a country the size of the state of Mississippi. It lasted 21 years. We lost 58,000 dead and came out on the short end of the stick. I'm having a hard time in eastern Kentucky telling the people that that dog should hunt. But in any event, I go to law school, and our senior senator was Senator Marlowe Cook. And what he told us was... He said that he'd been in the State Department, and when I asked the question at the end of his speech as a freshman law student, I was in a coat and tie, and he said that I asked him about the Gulf of Tonkin, and he kind of got a little red in the face. He said, "Lyndon lied like a dog. There weren't any North Vietnamese torpedo butts." The first time I mentioned another Kentucky senator, Thruston Morton. And a very distinguished family. His brother served in Nixon's cabinet. But he got mad and said, "Lyndon lied like a dog. There were no North Vietnamese torpedoes shot at our ships, and there were no North Vietnamese torpedo boats." That put me on, and that was in 1970, spring of 1970. So I'm a few years ago, our son was at the Virginia Military Institute, and Eunice and I and my wife were on the Parents' Council, and... We were over there and putting up the tent for a parents' weekend kind of an event, and across the parade deck comes an older man with a navy blue and gold hat on, USS Turner Joy. And I went up to him and asked him most politely. I said, "When did you serve on the Turner Joy?" He said, "1964." And I said, "Well, what was your billet?" And he said, "I was the chief sonarman." I said, "Were you there in August?" He said, "Oh, of course I was there." And I said, "Well, I have to ask you." And he stopped me in the middle. He said, "There weren't any North Vietnamese torpedo boats, and torpedo shot at us." And very soon after that incident, I was sent through the United States and to a rather obscure naval base in Italy. And I served there for a long period of time while they were debating the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which led to the Gulf of Tonkin, the memorandum of the Gulf of Tonkin, the resolution that basically authorized Johnson to wage war and put American fighting forces in Vietnam. So I had a little personal experience with that incident, the Gulf of Tonkin. And of course, you mentioned Saddam Hussein and so-called threat to America. So there's a pattern here. And it always takes this power elite, as Nixon called them, or invisible government that Mayor John Hyland referred to them as. There's always been, Roosevelt himself, Franklin Roosevelt, wrote Colonel House in November of 1933, and he referred to them as a financial element in the larger centers that's owned the government since the days of Andrew Jackson. And that's in the Presidential Library, signed by Franklin Roosevelt on White House stationery. And I know your listeners would be happy to have a copy of that, and I know you have a copy of that in your archives.
I found that actually when I went through Colonel House's papers back at Yale University in 1980. We do make that available if anybody wants to read that letter signed by Roosevelt talking about how our government has been controlled by financial elements in the major centers since the days of Andrew Jackson. Now, he's writing in 1933 about what had happened 100 years earlier. So there's no question, somebody controls our government, and the average person has very little idea that those same forces control our government today, or are in the process of destroying the stability and financial stability of our nation.
Well,
go right ahead.
The most important, Americans don't know history. They haven't been taught history. At least two generations really haven't been taught real American history. And we've had many presidents who've sent a warning, like Herbert Hoover. Herbert Hoover said, "Liberty dies of the water of her own well, free speech poisoned by untruth." And he later said, he warned us in a most serious way. I took the study of what happened in mass media communications back to 1915. And it's interesting that there was a congressional investigation in 1917 into what had happened in the media that had been beating the drumbeats for war, and it was clear Remember, World War One started in August of 1914. And in 1915, according to the congressional record, and I'd like to read it, I think it said that important, February the 9th, 1917, page 2947 of the congressional record, in March 1915, the J.P. Morgan interest got together 12 men high up in the newspaper world and employed them to select the most influential newspapers in the United States and sufficient number of them to control generally the policy of the daily press of the United States. They found it was only necessary to purchase control of the 25 greatest papers. An editor was furnished for each paper to properly supervise and edit information considered vital to the interests of the purchasers. And, of course, the campaign slogan in 1916, when Woodrow Wilson ran for re-election, then elected in 1912, was, "He kept us out of war." I don't think they had bumper stickers in those days, but that was the slogan. And, of course, the plans to get the United States in the war were laid down before that, and here was the notion that the press then was controlled, and money came from Europe, and the J.P. Morgan interest handled that for them, and it was a very powerful thing for me to realize all the way back, you know, in 1915, and Congress was concerned about it. Daniel Boorstin, who was the librarian of the Library of Congress from the mid-70s to 1987, most Americans don't even know what the library and the Library of Congress, they just think it's a librarian like at the local public library. But in point of fact, he's the chief historian for Congress and the U.S. Senate. So that if there's any question in all questions, you're always looking for historical precedent. So they're daily providing research from the Library of Congress to senators, congressmen, and their staff. And he writes a book that was published in 1961. That was the year I went on active duty for the first time. This is what he said in a book, the title of which is The Image, A Guide to Pseudo-Events in America, published in 61. He said, "Americans live in a world of pseudo-facts, which is created for them by their own media." And I thought that was extremely significant. Wilson... who was the only college president to be elected president of the United States, did make some important points. He said that a nation which does not remember what it was yesterday does not know what it is trying to do today, nor what it's doing in the future. We are doing a futile thing if we do not know where we came from and what we have been about. In other words, that's how important American history is. The Supreme Court held that a page of history is worth a volume of logic, and we get the logic in moral relativism in talk radio. We get it on the television debates where it's right and left, Republican, Democrat. We're not, but the page of history is what should dictate, and the history hasn't been taught for a long time. In fact, David Horowitz, who's been, I think, a guest on your show in the past, who was raised in a Bolshevik home, according to testimony he gave to a commission that I served on. We were dedicated to the destruction and overthrow of the United States and undermining of all of its institutions. And he said, subject to the penalties of perjury in August of 1992 in Los Angeles, with a room full of media, major media, looking at the Presidential Commission on the Assignment of Women in the Military. And he said, by the late 60s, we had captured all your institutions but the armed forces. And that we knew that promoting homosexuality in the military and women in combat would undermine the military and give us that last institution. And after his testimony was over, and after we took a break, I walked around and introduced myself to David and had read his book, Radical Son, and knew his background. And of course, we were being told by the media that he was a conservative. He changed his political persuasion from a hard left Trotskyite to a conservative or neoconservative. And because Black Panthers had murdered a friend of his in cold blood, and I said, "You said you had all of our institutions, but the military. What about the seminaries and churches?" And he looked at me with a satisfied look on his face for a moment, like the cat that ate the canary. He said, "We got them first. They were the easiest." So you wonder what's going on in the church house, and you wonder what's going on in Washington. But it's very important to understand that many, many leaders of our country have, he said, David said, our nation's heritage is under attack in the classroom. So why doesn't anybody care? I mean, he said that widely. It was published in a major Jewish World Review, which is quoted by many, many people, in July of 2000, speaking out, and trying to warn us of what was coming. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco declared public school children reciting the Pledge of Allegiance unconstitutional. I mean, we're seeing the eradication of the history that reveals why America's official national motto is still "In God We Trust." That's not taught in the schoolhouses anymore. We've had two generations that I've spoken to, thousands and thousands of 11th and 12th graders, many of them on their way into junior ROTC, interested in a military career. And I ask them this question: why is America's national official national motto "In God We Trust"? And I mean, I've done this now for 15 years, and I haven't had a single student hold up their hand, and the teachers are confounded, and the students are uneasy by the question I've asked, because they know there's this separation of church and state, but they don't know, because they haven't been taught why that's so.
Well, we're going to be back here in just a minute with Colonel Ron Ray. Ladies and gentlemen, America's in real trouble today, because most people don't understand the past, and we don't understand the past, we have no future. Go right ahead.
All right. There have been surveys of this. One in four of college graduates don't know who fought in the Civil War. 13% thought the Civil War was between the United States and England. One in five teenagers don't know what country America declared its independence from. I mean, it's legion. David McCullough, also skull and bones from Yale, like Kerry and George W. Bush and many others, wrote a decent book about John Adams, and he gave a speech at the National Book Fair, the Library of Congress, and the Smithsonian in Washington back in 2002. He said, "We're raising a generation of historical illiterates. This historical ignorance is dangerous to American liberty. We face a foe today who believes in enforced ignorance. We don't. A foe today, and that's a domestic enemy. And I can assure you that the organizations that are promoting the eradication of our history within our country and have for decades, that's not money coming from radical Muslim countries or radical Muslim terrorists, that's coming from right here, from groups like the ACLU, the NEA, and many similar organizations." And the Reist Committee report, you're very much knowledgeable of that, Stan. You've kept the foundations, their power and influence in print for 20 years. And gave me a copy of the book. And Carol Reese specifically found that the huge tax-exempt foundations, Carnegie, Ford, Rockefeller foundations, quote, this is a finding of a congressional committee, foundations have supported conscious distortion of our history. And so it's going on. The suppression of our history has been a political objective of the ACLU, the NEA, for decades. In November of 1967, the National Education Association's journal, entitled the article, "The New Social Studies," commented on the shift of educational emphasis. And from when federal funds first flowed into education in 1965 under Lyndon Johnson's Great Society program. And this is what they said: "The most obvious change occurring in the social studies curriculum is a breaking away from the traditional dominance of history, geography, and civics, which would be what a person in We the People of a free society would have to know. Materials now from the behavioral sciences, sociology, social psychology are being incorporated into both elementary and secondary school programs," post-1965. Herbert Hoover believed that this media monopoly, this mass communication by commercial interest and by media interest, had already undermined America's capacity for independent judgment. He wrote a book a year and a half after he left office, and he warned America in 1934, quote, this is President Herbert Hoover, a better president than the modern histories will tell you, "Bureaucracy has already developed a vast ramifying propaganda subtly designed to control thought and opinion. The constant use of the radio, the platform, and the press, by device of exposition, news, and attack with one point of view, becomes a powerful force in transforming the nation's mentality and in destroying its independent judgment." So that's why you're able to put so much over on the American people. It's easier to do because they've been prepared. That Hoover could say that in 1934. You can get that book online, The Challenge to Liberty. He was the last president to say the job of the president is to secure liberty and justice for every American, to secure liberty and justice.
Hold that
for every
thought.
American.
We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan and Chris. Colonel Ray was talking about Herbert Hoover, really the president who really believed that we should adhere to the Constitution. The purpose of government was to secure liberty and justice for the individual. How do you get liberty for the individual? You restrict the power of the federal government so men can be free. Well, what happens if you have injustice? Well, do you really think that the federal government is going to bring you justice? I mean, they certainly will go out, they target people, they go out after people who disagree with them, and this is, you cannot have a free society if you have, you know, all powerful federal government. Well, they say, what happens if you have injustice at the state levels? Well, you can do one of two things. You can fight it, or you can move to another state. But what do you do when you have a tyranny in Washington, D.C.? Well, you move to another country, that's pretty hard to do. What we need to do is preserve America. And, of course, the big problem today, as Colonel Ray has brought out, is the media is largely controlled. Fortunately, we do have a few radio stations we can buy time on where we can tell you what's going on, but then of course we've got to get people to support us, and a lot of people just much rather get free radio and of course get all sorts of lies and free television. And most of our television, all of our major networks are controlled by one or another aspect of the corporate elite. And really, of course, so many of our Christian television networks and programs are controlled by people who are there not to reveal but to conceal the truth about Christianity and the undermining of Christianity within our seminaries, which has resulted in many ministers who are not preaching the Gospels. I mean, we have ministers out there that are struggling and doing the best that they possibly can. But we very seldom see them in the major churches. I mean, the churches that we see, the large churches, have usually gone into the church growth movement and begin to compromise their principles for using management techniques to control the people there, and certainly never to talk about the really important issues that face our nation today as we move into a period of chaos and crisis. And ladies and gentlemen, it's coming much sooner than most people realize. But Colonel, you go right ahead.
Well, you need to have more radio stations like Radio Liberty. You had to have more shows like that. You need to support the show like that and be active. You know, the grandson of Benjamin Franklin, named Benjamin Franklin Bache, was an editor of the Philadelphia General Advertiser. And in 1792, after he'd been arrested during the Adams administration under their version of the Patriot Act, which was called the Alien and Sedition Act, and he'd served time in jail for being critical of the government. And after he was released, he said, "Liberty will never be safe or durable in a republic till every citizen thinks it as much his duty to take care of the state as to take care of his family, and until an indifference to any public question shall be considered as a public offense." That's a man who went to jail for his beliefs, trying to put the word out. And one person can make a difference. And most people who listen, look, Dr. Stan Monteith has reached out to so many people. He's been a great source of information, history, and provided materials for us in the early years and early going. And one person can make a difference. And look at George Washington. Look at Paul, you know, in the New Testament. And look what difference he can make. If you believe, if you believe that you can't make a difference, you believe the lie, and it will make you failing to take action. And you have your time, your talent, your prayers, your funds, and your influence. And you know somebody who is an influential businessman. You know somebody on the county or city council. You can learn, and you can take that information and be an advocate for pointing the way back to cry restore, as Isaiah chapter 42, to make God's law honorable again in this country again, like it was, and to understand that the mass media is only reporting a little bit. There was a great survey made in 1997, Project for Excellence in Journalism, and they basically looked at over 6,000 stories from 16 news outlets spanning a 20-year period, And this is they made this observation. A citizen's perception of a society can vary greatly depending on the source of news. Primetime network news magazines have all but abandoned covering traditional topics such as government, social welfare, education, and economics in favor of lifestyle and news you can use. What was the primary story in the national media over the latter part of a week and through the weekend and the early next week when the cap and trade that's going to lower the standard of living in the United States was being debated in the House and then in the Senate? What we heard about was Michael Jackson, as if that was the biggest story in America that was going to affect us all.
And there, people have to understand that there are about five mega corporations that control, 90% of the major media outlets in this country. There's a book which Colonel Ray has referred to in the past called The New Media Monopoly by Professor Ben Bagdakian, who's been studying this for 20 years, and the book is still available from Amazon. I don't know if we're carrying it or not. I hope we are. But The New Media Monopoly will introduce you to the fact that the media is controlled, and they are creating your reality every night on television. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Of course, I guess it's Colonel Ron Ray, and Colonel just picked the story right up there.
Well, I was going to say that same study of excellence in journalism in 1997 said that one of the most striking features looking over a 20-year period at 6,000 different outlets that was that only 8% of all the stories on primetime news magazines concern the combined areas of education, economics, foreign affairs, the military, national security, politics, or social welfare issues. 8%. Today, Time and Newsweek most often have cover stories in the area of consumer or health news or celebrity entertainment. And, of course, there's only, I think now down... When Bagdakian wrote his first book in the late Carter years, 78-79, the media monopoly, two-time Pulitzer Prize winner for the Washington Post, obviously a left-wing in his ideology, but he was alarmed because he found that there were only 52 American-based companies that controlled all of our flow of information, whether it was magazines, newspapers, radio, television, movies, what have you, though there were only 52 American-based companies, and he was kind of given a hard way to go, and the people told him he was an alarmist, and he continued to write it, and I think there's been five or six editions since that time, and now we're down, I think, to something of only five multinational corporations. Five multinational corporations control everything. If you had a man like that who was alarmed in the late 70s at 52 American-based companies. Now we have the five multinational companies that have this tremendous control. And if you look at what's the goal, what's the objective, and if you look at some of the great men of history who were influential in their times, Arnold Toynbee, who was cited in Europe and Great Britain and across the United States. If you studied history in the 30s, you would have to be exposed to his work. And at the Institute for the Study of International Affairs, he said, "We are at present working discreetly with all our might to wrest this mysterious force called sovereignty out of the clutches of the local nation states of the world.
Hold
all the
thought.
Time we are denying with our lips what we are doing with our hands. Undermining sovereignty."
Would you mind giving that quotation? I wanted our listeners to hear it. Colonel Ray was quoting from Arnold Toynbee. Toynbee was actually a member of Cecil Rhodes, a original secret society. But Toynbee was one of the great historians. He was part of this little clique that is working behind the scenes to take over control of the world. Could you give that quotation again? Because I think it's so vitally important. And where will people find it?
Well, it's Arnold Toynbee at the Institute for the Study of International Affairs. It was in 1931. I'd be happy to provide it from anybody if they'd send me an email to Colonel Ray, C-O-L-R-A-Y, at A-Y-E.net. That's C-O-L-R-A-Y at A-Y-E.net. I'd be happy to send it out. He was speaking at the Institute for the Study of International Affairs. He said they're undermining sovereignty of individual nations. They're obviously building global government. And he said, quote, we are at present working discreetly with all our might to wrest this mysterious force called sovereignty out of the clutches of the local nation states of the world. All the time we are denying with our lips what we are doing with our hands. And, you know, this has been dealt with by serious people in every few years, going all the way back to 1915, 1916, 1917. And the alarm has been sounded, but it's not reaching people who, enough people, and they're not, they're already being transformed. Their capacity for independent judgment's been undermined. They've been subjected to a vast ramifying propaganda subtly designed to control thought and opinion. And you see it in every way, and you need to wake up. Alf Ehrenberg wrote a Ideals and Their Shadows, Stockholm, 1936. He said, if one could control radio, press, school, church, art, science, film, one can transform each truth into a lie and each unreason into reason. 1936. And this has been mentioned over and over again. The Interior Secretary under Roosevelt, Harold Ickes, 1939. World War II is getting started in Europe, and the pressures are starting to rise to get America to come in. And he said there was a media monopoly having no public interest. American journalism is semi-monopolistic, owned by wealthy businessmen and investors, opposed to organized labor, public utilities, and opinions that would criticize large-scale advertisers. In short, he accuses newspapers of having no public interest, but rather being driven by political and economic powers on which they depended for their survival. So, I mean, there have been a whole host of witnesses that have spoken out, and I think that it's enough for you to begin to grab a hold, and to question, as Reagan said about the Soviets, trust and verify. You need to verify, you know, so before you take an opinion, so before you understand that you have a duty to think about what's going on in the state of our public affairs, like you do to take care of your family, that you need to be well-informed and you need to trust and verify the source of the information you have. During the late 1930s, according to Christopher Simpson, who wrote a book the title of which should chill every American, The Science of Coercion, Communication Research and Psychological Warfare, 1945 to 1960. The book was published in 1994. And Christopher Simpson said that during the 1930s, the Rockefeller Foundation, quote, believed mass media constituted a uniquely powerful force in modern society for imposing the will of the elite on the masses. And, I mean, there it's right there, out of their own mouth and out of the mouths of leaders across the political spectrum, from Herbert Hoover to Franklin Roosevelt to over and over again. Simpson went on to say, The Science of Coercion, there was a remarkably tight circle of men and women who shared several important conceptions about mass communications research. They regarded mass communication as a tool for social management and as a weapon in social conflict, and they expressed common assumptions concerning the usefulness of their research, particularly experimental and quasi-experimental effects. In other words, public opinion surveys, quantitative content analysis as a means of illuminating what communication is and its application to the social management of the masses. Of course, everybody remembers Spiro Agnew, that's our age, but he took the media on directly. But we didn't understand the debate because he was attacked from every side. But he said censorship already exists. And this is what he said in that famous speech that led him to being forced from office. I'm asking whether a form of censorship already exists when the news that 40 million Americans receive each night is determined by a handful of men responsible to their corporate employers and filtered through a handful of commentators who admit to their own set of biases. We should never trust such power over public opinion in the hands of an elected government. It is time we question it in the hands of a small, unelected elite. And he was driven from office. His whole life was put under scrutiny. Elliot Spitzer, Attorney General of New York, was a reformer, you know, a Democrat, obviously with political ambitions, enormously talented, and he began to take on groups like Hank Greenberg and AIG. He began to use his power as Attorney General in New York to get into multinational corporations who had major offices in New York and conduct investigations. He took on the World Jewish Congress. He took on a lot of issues that were very politically incorrect. And the next thing you know, his life's put under great scrutiny, and he's got into the, what they call the honeypot, and he's driven from office because he, like Spiro Agnew, began to really challenge entrenched wealth, entrenched power.
Well, I think the thing that really got certainly Elliot Spitzer into trouble was he actually wrote an article for the Washington Post that pointed out that, you know, the origin of the current financial crisis is nothing like we've been told. He said that every one of the 50 state attorney generals recognized that the predatory lending practices in the housing mortgage market was going to result in a disaster. They'd known this for many years. They'd tried to stop the predatory lending practices and prevent the collapse of the housing market, which the state attorney generals believed would bring down our whole economic system, and the Bush administration intervened and would not allow them to do that. In other words, the state attorney generals couldn't even enforce their own laws, and within 3 weeks after that article appeared in the Washington Post, why, suddenly the FBI leaks a story. Now, why is the FBI leaking stories? Why, very simply, to destroy Elliot Spitzer and to shift the debate from why did the Bush administration intervene and prevent, you know, the state of general, attorney generals from enforcing the laws and stopping this collapse of our economic system to, oh, what a terrible person Elliot Spitzer was. And certainly he never should have done what he did. And I don't excuse that. But you have to understand that this is what happens if somebody tells the American people the truth. They will be destroyed, and they did destroy Elliot Spitzer, and I believe it was because he pointed out that the people in positions of power knew what was going to happen. They knew what was going to happen to our economic system. They intentionally brought down our economic system, and we can't let the American people know that. Fascinating sequence of events. 3 weeks after that article appeared in the Washington Post, the FBI just leaks a story which is dishonest, against the law, but then who's going to hold the FBI to legal standards?
There you go. There's no question about it. And we're told, you know, here's a liberal, so you know you're getting the idea that this is a guy, and he got drawn into a traditional kind of a honey trap, and the guy's brought down. But he was really trying to do the right things. Everybody, every American who should have been supporting him, regardless of their party affiliation or political, here's a guy that was really taking on entrenched power for the public good, really for the public good. In 96, there were 10 media corporations, which Ben Bakdikian pointed out when it's gotten down to 10, when I think he came out with the fifth edition. He said, each of the dominant firms has adopted a strategy of creating its own closed system of control over every step in the national media process, from creating of content to its delivery, no content, news, entertainment, or other public messages will reach the public. In other words, no content, no news, no entertainment, or other public messages will reach the public unless a handful of corporate decision makers decide that it will. 1996. By 2003, we're down to 5 multinational corporations: Time Warner, Disney, Viacom, News Corporation, and Bertelsmann.
It was really very interesting. I was asked to be on probably the largest talk program in the United States, coast to coast. I was to go on. I was going to tell the Elliott Spitzer story. I was going to tell why they wanted to collapse our economy. They really want, of course, to impoverish our people and bring us into this world government. And everything was all set until 5 o'clock in the evening I was supposed to go on. And suddenly we get a call saying, we do not want you on coast to coast tonight. Don't call us. We'll call you. That is how the media is controlled. The last thing they want is for the people to realize this whole financial collapse has been contrived, and it's going to end up, of course, with the destruction of the savings, the life savings of most of the people listening to this program. But
well,
you're not to know about that sort of thing. And believe me, it'll be a cold day whenever I get onto coast to coast again.
Well, it's really interesting that. I mean, what's really, former CNN news anchor Aaron Brown says news favors scandal over substance. He said, truth no longer matters in the context of politics and sadly in the context of cable news. I mean, this is somebody who's a news anchor for CNN.
Well, basically, we have an article we offer. It's written by Richard Harwood. It was an article he wrote in the Washington Post. Now, Richard Harwood was the editorial writer for the editorial page of the Washington Post for many years. But after he retired, he wrote an article about the ruling class journalism, and he simply pointed out that the members of the Council on Foreign Relations controlled, you know, the media. They slanted the things. Members of the Council on Foreign Relations controlled the government. He listed the people that were in the Clinton administration, and almost everybody in a position of power came from the Council on Foreign Relations. And Richard Harwood's article appeared, you know, in one of the back pages and never was seen again. We have a copy of it. I've contacted the Washington Post for permission to reproduce it and put it into a syllabus, and no way will they even discuss that article. They don't want people to understand. There are many people in the media know what's going on, but they fear to say anything because they know they will be fired, and suddenly they will never get another job in the media again, or they may very well end up like Gary Webb, a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist from the San Jose Mercury, who ended up committing suicide by shooting himself in the head twice to make sure he was dead. And
right.
If you want to get into the background, we have a book which contains an essay written by Gary Webb shortly before he shot himself in the head twice to make sure he was dead. It's called Dead. The book is called Into the Buzzsaw. Into the Buzzsaw. Articles by a number of people who worked for the media who dared to tell the truth.
Including Monica Jensen Stevenson,
yes.
The men we left behind in Vietnam.
Right. In fact, we talked to Monica, and she got the copyright back on her book, moved to Canada, and got her book, Kiss the Boys Goodbye, republished there. Somebody bought up the publisher, and she told me, and we have this on one of my interviews with her, we offer, she told me how they accidentally shredded 5,000 copies of her book, but she said it was just an accident. They just accidentally shredded 5,000. Yeah. It's amazing how these accidents so often happen.
You know, it was interesting that China went to the United Nations to complain about America's media control, and they prepared a report on human rights violations in the United States, and they cited the greatest problems to be in the view of China. And this is 2005, U.S. citizen infringements, high rates of violent crime, disparity of wealth and racial discrimination, prisoner abuse is 2, media control was 3, and loopholes in its election system. So China is pointing out at its great concerns, and of course they're the largest creditor to the United States. They saw that media control, that's their word, in the complaint that they filed by the Information Office of China's State Council Thursday, March 3rd, 2005.
Well, it's sort of like the pot calling the kettle black. I wouldn't say they have a free press over there, but at least people throughout the world understand we have control of the media here. In fact, if you want to know what's really going on in the world, why you get the publications that come out of Europe, you get the publications that come out of England, but of course you're not going to get the truth right here in the United States, unless perhaps you're up on the Internet, and we have a few places we go, WorldNet Daily, certainly newsreviews.com, Joel Skousen's website. is excellent, and but unfortunately, the average person really finds it so hard to believe that we have media control here in the United States, and most of what they hear on television in the evening is simply propaganda, carefully filtered to conceal, not reveal, the truth.
You know who? You know where that quote comes from?
Which one, though?
That's Alan Dulles.
Really?
Alan Dulles was getting up from speaking to, I think, the Foreign Relations Committee of the United States Senate, and they didn't know that he sort of put his hand out over the microphone and was chuckling, he loading up his pipe that he could have when he got out, and but the mic was still on. He said, "You know, we only reveal in order to conceal."
Well, I mean,
so I loved you. You didn't know. I don't know.
No,
you
really did.
You've
got some wonderful quotations, and I love them. We have, I think, one of the most important ones. We actually carry the book. It's written by David Rockefeller, who said this in 2002. Some even believe we, that is the Rockefellers, are part of a secret cabal working against the best interests of the United States, characterizing my family and me as internationalists, and of conspiring with others around the world to build more integrated global political and economic structure, one world, if you will. If that's the charge, I stand guilty, and I'm proud of it. And, of course, that quotation is quite well known. But then he goes on to say, you know, the populace, very seldom mention how much better things are in third world countries and how much better they are even here in the United States. And those things certainly wouldn't have happened, you know, if it hadn't been for our efforts. But they never mention all these good things we've done. Well, of course, he was going to claim the good things they'd done in 2002. He should admit the terrible things they've done today as they plunge the world into a financial holocaust that was going to end up destroying the savings of most people here in the United States. And I believe it's going to lead to a disaster throughout the world. But you'll never hear these quotations. And we carry the book. It's available, page 405. We carry the book, Memoirs by David Rockefeller. Give us a call. 1-800-544-8927. Is it really true? Yes, of course it's true. In fact, his daughters were both close friends of that great capitalist, Fidel Castro. In fact, at the bottom of the page there, he talks about how his daughter frequently visited Fidel Castro. You probably think that Fidel Castro is an enemy of the United States. He'd come up here and visit David Rockefeller. But, of course, you're not going to read about that in your local newspaper. Our guest this evening has been Colonel Ron Ray. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up the program here at Radio Liberty. Well, Colonel, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
I'm going to use that 3 minutes to quote William Rusher's 1988 book, The Coming Battle for the Media.
You go right ahead.
And he points out that free press makes government accountable. And he said, quote, "The original thrust of American journalism was to communicate the activities of government as well as other power structures in society to the people who could make informed and intelligent decisions regarding the value of that activity and act to impose their desires through representative government." That was the original intent of the founders. And they called it the Fourth Estate. I think the first person to use that may have been Thomas Jefferson, that they were a free press who would be critical of government, and that John Adams, the second president of the United States, wanted to throw them in jail, threw some in jail, because they were being critical of government, which interfered with their ability to do what they wanted to do. Anyway,
well,
thanks for the opportunity, Stan. I appreciate you and standing out and crying restore for one nation under God.
Well, I think a tragedy is that the Fourth Estate has really become a fifth column. These people are not telling us the truth. It's not that they're all bad people. They simply want to keep their jobs. And certainly, if you are in the media and you tell the truth, you get fired. And you mentioned earlier today on an earlier program, you talked to Arnold de Borgrave, who, of course, was the editor of the Washington Times. He had actually worked for the Washington Post. He was the chief foreign correspondent for the Washington Post. And when he told the truth, and they, you know, they simply fired him. And then he went to work for the Washington Times. I don't know what happened there. Certainly one of my favorite columnists. Whatever happened to Arnold de Borgrave?
I don't know, he wrote that great book, The Spike, which really brought home to me that the idea that they could just kill a story was more important than spinning a story or even putting out an untruth. Just kill it so you'd never hear about it.
And that's the trouble that happens so often with the media today. The stories just are never read. The editor takes the story, excellent story, and simply spikes it, and it's not allowed to be discussed. I was simply pointing out that this has happened to the stories put out by Sybil Edmonds about, of course, the plan to which I believe is to plunge us into a nuclear war with the Middle East. Her discussions and revelations about Osama bin Laden working with our government, and the fact we were transferring or allowing the transfer of nuclear technology to Pakistan, and that has been totally suppressed here in the United States.
You know, there's a book that comes out every year called Censored, and it's there's a group of journalists that are very vigorous on the truth, and they try to pick out the most important stories that were censored in that particular year. It comes out every year, Censored.
Well, we're going to have to get together again sometime real soon and cover that. We're out of time, though, Ron. God bless. Thanks so much.
All right, Stan. Bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we certainly hope you enjoyed our conversation with Colonel Ron Ray. Actually, of course, he had come on short notice, our regularly scheduled guest this afternoon. It canceled out because of other engagement, so Ron came on second time today. He was with us earlier today, but he is a great patriot, and I'm proud to call him a friend. Well, this is the time when I really need to remind our listeners that my ministry, Radio Liberty, is really under a certain amount of pressure today. Certainly the financial contraction has impacted many of our listeners. Many of our supporters have been with us 10 or 15 years, lost their jobs, and so we're trying to just to keep our network together. We have over 60 outlets every single week, and if you'd like to help us, and you're in a position to help, and you believe, as I do, that we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization, why, you can write to us at Post Office Box 13 in Santa Cruz, California, 95063. That's Post Office Box 13 in Santa Cruz, California, 95063. Or call us at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to understand what's really going on behind the scenes, why, you need to get my book or watch my talk on the Brotherhood of Darkness, which exposes the spiritual forces behind the various organizations and people who are directing the course of affairs throughout the world today. And certainly you need to hear my talk on the Forbidden Secret and get the syllabus that goes with that. My talk on the Financial Armageddon, and of course the syllabus goes with that. And we tell you who Barack Obama really is and who put him into positions of power. Now, we can talk about the Trilateral Commission, and the Trilateral Commission is very important, but what about the spiritual force behind the Trilateral Commission and behind the Council on Foreign Relations and behind the Bilderbergers? And if you don't look at unfolding events through the prism of biblical prophecy, nothing makes sense. That's why you certainly want to get our DVDs. There are 5 DVDs in part 1 and part 2 of the Final Countdown. That's the Final Countdown. We recommend it because it will put things into clear perspective for you today. If you're a Christian, you'll certainly want to be able to understand what's going on, why we are going to war in the Middle East and expanding the war over there. Of course, they can't tell the common people that because the elite have their agenda. You certainly need to get our DVD on the Trilateral Commission put out, the talk that was given by Patrick Wood and at our last conference. You can get our newsletters at radioliberty.com, our website, radioliberty.com. You can listen to our programs 9 hours a day there and not get anything accomplished. You can get them on archive, blog, MP3. You need to get the information. You need to help us get it out across America. And then, of course, we do hope, of course, if you have not laid in a supply of long-term food, why, we certainly work with Ready Reserve Food, and you'll get the same discount prices from Radio Liberty you'll get from Ready Reserve. If you need a Berkey water filter, if you need Now, the health products, and you should have a good supply of all of these things on hand and just keep them for, you know, for a good long while. But we are entering very difficult problems. Is there going to be a financial collapse sometime later this year? Are they going to try to force people to be vaccinated with an experimental vaccine for a non-existent problem, an experimental vaccine, that much of it will contain squalene, which will trigger an epidemic of autoimmune diseases unparalleled in human history? Why would they be rushing through an experimental vaccine for a non-existent problem and using all the techniques of propaganda to frighten people into taking this unnecessary, untested vaccine? Why would they do that? Well, of course, maybe we need to get our material on population control or the planned population reduction. If you want a copy of our population control agenda monograph, it is